Welcome to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400, 99.3 FM WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. In the second segment, Brent Peterson from the Keweenaw Community Foundation will join me to talk about the work the KCF has done this year. But in this segment, I am joined by Dr. Rolf Peterson, research professor at Michigan Tech and also the lead biologist at Isle Royale National Park. Dr. Peterson, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Pretty good. So obviously there's two sides to the work that you do. I guess you can... How does it differentiate, or is it intertwined?
Oh, certainly. Well, I'm on the faculty at Michigan Tech University, and actually the real leader of the effort is John Vrustich, who's an active faculty member at Michigan Tech. I'm retired, actually, but I still have this label called research professor. So I've been involved in doing research at Isle Royale National Park since 1970, and actually, I came in about the 12th year of it. The entire study had been based at Purdue University, and then it was moved to Michigan Tech in 1975. So it's been continued as a research project of mine and now John's since that time.
So are there any other work that you do at Michigan Tech, any other research that you do besides obviously what you do at Isle Royale?
Oh, as an active faculty member before I retired, certainly there were lots of other research projects. They did mostly involve wolves or animals that wolves eat, like beaver and elk and so forth. But since retiring about 8 years ago, most of my efforts have been at Isle Royale and then also at Yellowstone to a very minor extent.
So, I guess what would be your day? What's a day like heading over to Isle Royale for, I guess, a day of research?
Oh, Isle Royale, as most people around here understand, is very hard to get to. So I don't go there for a day. I go there for months at a time because it's way too hard to get back and forth. And in the winter, there is no way to get there except by flying from Minnesota, which is the closest place. So once you get there, yeah, I'm not going anywhere for a while because that may take you a week of sitting and around and waiting to get back and forth.
Just recently, there was the ruling about the gray wolves, putting them back on the endangered species list. I just wanted to get, your reaction when you first heard about that.
Frankly, I was surprised because I'd forgotten there even was a court case going on. There have been court cases going on involving wolves in the Great Lakes area for, 10 or 12 years. There's almost always a court case going on. And I've been chair of the recovery team for the federal government since 1996, so I thought I was up on things, but I frankly forgot about this one. And so the district judge ruled that there were a couple of points, and I haven't read all 111 pages.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was very extensive.
So I'm relying on other people that have read it. But there appear to be two areas of concern. One is the eagerness that the states have displayed in just going out and killing wolves right after they were taken off the endangered species list. And in Michigan, mostly for administrative reasons, the wolf prior to being delisted this last time, it's about the fourth time, I think, but this last time, wolves in Michigan were considered endangered. This is a legal classification, so an endangered species cannot be touched. Even lethal control, which is a smart thing to do in some cases if wolves are killing domestic animals, lethal control has to be done under a permit from the federal government. So it's very restrictive. So every state had its own designation, even amongst Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. The states here have gone from, in the case of Wisconsin, kind of all out hunting and trapping to total protection again. So it's just this bounce back and forth, which is unfortunately a symptom that, what is it? A symptom?
Yeah,
of
I was
total controversy.
I wanted to ask you. The back and forth of it, is it maybe just changing of philosophies, or just what could you attribute, if you could point out just this one thing that keeps flipping the debate, specifically within, the federal government and how they classify wolves?
I mean, there have been entire books written on this subject, so I don't have a quick answer, but the wolf is the most controversial species we've ever had to deal with in human history, other than our own species, which is even more troubling. But next to other humans, it's wolves that have challenged agricultural societies for the last 10,000 years. So this isn't new. And what's new is that the wolf rather remarkably recovered itself in the Midwest. And there wasn't any particular help that it got, other than some protection provided by the Endangered Species Act. But I think more important than that federal piece of legislation was just a sea change in public attitudes towards wolves. And that is due to lots of different things going on. But, society's changed, values changed, locations of people changed. We went from a rural society to a largely urban society. Our understanding of wolves changed, increased tremendously. Our understanding of what wolves do in nature changed. So all these things have dramatically changed in the last several decades, during which time wolves were protected by federal legislation. So all of a sudden, the states couldn't do anything with wolves in terms of active management on their own authority. And so they've just been sort of shoved in the management back room as far as the states are concerned. And then all of a sudden the gloves come off. Wolf is delisted rather quickly. I mean, it went back and forth.
Yeah,
and it's back, it's still in the back and forth stage. And I think it's the difficulty that the agencies and bureaucracies and courts have had with what to do with the wolf just reflects the divergent thinking that still exists in human societies about the wolf. In the past, we weren't divergent. We were just out to kill them, period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, geez, there's some people that actually think that wasn't so smart and wasn't the correct way to treat other species. So, and those people have a much greater voice now than they used to. So society is split pretty much right down the middle in terms of attitudes towards wolves. And there's an urban-rural split that's real obvious.
Definitely. And you bring up people's attitudes. And I do want to hit on the two proposals that in the November election. And the numbers weren't surprising, but many people, the numbers showed that a substantial amount of people in the UP supported the two proposals. And yet everybody downstate, which essentially outnumbered the people in the UP, shot it down.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I guess
that's the urban-rural split.
The urban-rural split, exactly. Do you think it's fair? But many people pointed to that. The fact that some people downstate maybe have never seen a wolf before, and the people in the UP have had to deal with them.
Sure. Sure. Is it fair? The wildlife of the state of Michigan belongs to everybody in Michigan, and all the benefits of some of our most charismatic wildlife species are here in the UP. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is that fair? Is it fair that all the moose live in the UP, and all the fox squirrels live in southern Michigan? That's just the way nature is, but. But the management of all wildlife in the state of Michigan under state authority is by law something that all of the citizens of Michigan have a stake in.
I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but do you agree with that way of handling things?
Oh, management by ballot box is perhaps not the best way to do things, but when authorities aren't measuring up to the task, aren't up to the task of managing wildlife in accordance with the public good, then the ballot box, the referendum, is the last resort. And Teddy Roosevelt recognized this 100 years ago. I mean, he was a staunch Republican, and he didn't particularly like wolves. But I'll tell you, he would stand by a public referendum and the right of the public to back up politicians if they're not behaving in accordance with the public good. Now, in Roosevelt's day, it was just out and out corruption that he was railing against. But he thought the referendum was extremely critical.
What would you propose, I guess? What would be the best way to figure out? Because, like I said, you have people who are in the thick of things in here in the UP, especially in the Western Upper Peninsula, who recognize, you know, let me ask you this. Is there a wolf, quote unquote, issue?
Well, there's many issues with wolves. But the primary issue that most people recognize as a concern would be wolf depredation on domestic animals, especially livestock.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the agricultural interest that actually did drive wolves to near extinction, in addition to just outright hatred of wolves. But that's a whole other subject matter. But when wolves kill domestic animals, they have to be dealt with, and usually lethal control is the only reasonable way to deal with those individuals, because if wolves start killing cattle, and they've crossed that line and they've decided, okay, this is how I'm going to make a living, it's pretty hard to reform them. You can't move them because they just come right back, or they'll do the same thing somewhere else. So lethal control has been successfully one of the successful tools to deal with depredation. And it's been that's been proven useful for decades. Now, there are many non-lethal ways of dealing with wolf depredation on livestock that are surprisingly effective. Some of them are just plain weird. Hanging little red strips of cloth on a rope around your cattle pasture or your sheep, that actually works.
Just maybe like practical ways.
Well, these are techniques that have been in use for centuries in Europe, Eastern Europe. It's called fladry. And wolves don't like strange things, and a bunch of funny little red rags on a rope around a pasture is reason for them to be very cautious. And, you know, it doesn't always work, but it works quite a bit of the time. Use of dogs. I mean, we've invented many species of dogs to prevent wolves from killing sheep. Dogs that look like sheep, and they're raised with sheep, and wolves don't like to mess with those big white dogs. And so that's a very effective way of reducing wolf depredation on cattle. So you put all these non-lethal techniques together, and it's a pretty good tool bag. Combine it with occasional lethal control, and it generally works. So the whole argument that we had to have a wolf hunt to control wolves is really not valid. First of all, a hunt of the scale that was proposed in Michigan isn't going to do anything to wolf numbers. So even targeting problem areas, it's a pretty weak case.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest, Dr. Rolf Peterson. Let's get into Last year. Probably something you don't want to remember.
Oh, I loved last year.
What did you?
Yeah.
Tell us about, I mean, being at Iowa. How about was the weather, I mean, basically the same over there as it was here on the peninsula?
Let's see. I have forgotten much of last winter because we're in the middle of this year,
but
cold. It was cold.
Yeah, in terms of, I guess, the temperature and snowfall, is it pretty much the same?
Oh, no. IRL gets much less snowfall than Upper Michigan, and it's a lot warmer there. Wait a minute. I'm thinking of the mainland. IRL's warmer because it's in the middle of Lake Superior in the winter, warmer than the Minnesota mainland.
Oh, okay.
But temperature-wise, it's probably not too. It'd be a little colder than Houghton, say.
Did it have any negative impacts? Did it make any kind of research difficult for you to do?
Oh no, the weather didn't bother us much at all. The colder it is, usually the better it is in terms of research, because then the lakes are all frozen. There's good landing conditions for the ski plane that we rely on. More snow and ice is always better for research because it provides that background so we can count moose, for example, without a lot of stumps getting in the visual field. And now wolves and moose are built to deal with snow, and they do very well with it. So in the cold, doesn't bother those species at all.
Would even in extreme cold? I mean, is there ever weather conditions that would affect the animals or even the environment itself?
Oh, it affects what they do, but they have ways of surviving it. For example, crusted snow is a really big advantage to wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And in late winter, the snow is often crusted. And so wolves have a tremendous advantage in hunting prey. In these northern areas, when the snow is of a certain quality. So on a day-to-day basis, probably in the winter, nothing is more important to a wolf than what the snow looks like and feels like.
I talked to you last year about how the vast majority of Lake Superior was frozen, frozen. And the fact that the, is it ice bridge?
There can be an ice connection, ice bridge connection. To Isle Royale.
Mm-hmm. How significant was that in terms of, I guess, adding to your research? Because then you have wolves from other areas migrating to the island. Was that the case?
They can go both ways, of course.
Oh yeah. They can leave the island to some other.
But the ice bridge has been a critical factor ever since wolves got there, in terms of allowing other wolves to come to the island and occasionally breed and inject new genes into the population. And now we realize that was absolutely critical. And then as ice bridges became less frequent over the decades from the 60s to the present day, they've declined from an ice bridge every 4 out of 5 years to an ice bridge every 10 or 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's made all the difference in terms of genetic renewal of this population, because that's why the wolves now are in such poor shape at Isle Royale. There haven't been ice bridges, except two exceptions in the last 17 years. 17 years ago, an immigrant wolf did come over to Isle Royale, and we saw firsthand how important that was. Now, that sort of immigration had probably been happening rarely, but often enough in the previous decades so that there wasn't this genetic deterioration that there is now. But the last two ice bridges, 2008 and 2014, all we know that happened was wolves left Isle Royale and went to the mainland, because they're looking for suitable mates, and they can't find anybody except their brother and their mother and their sister.
Mm-hmm.
And wolves aren't any different than people in that regard, and every other species of plant and animal in the world. Inbreeding doesn't work.
Have you been to the island recently?
I was on the island last in October this year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess, I mean, it's fine right now. It's doing okay. Is there any anticipation of anything that you're going to be looking for specifically?
Well, we've actually wolf predation has been virtually lost for the last 3 years. So mm-hmm. there's rapid changes occurring in the animals, populations, the prey animals that wolves typically prey on, and that's moose and beaver. So over the last, we've lost wolf predation, or it's gone down to a small portion of its usual level over the last 3 years. So virtually no wolf predation in the last 3 years. Moose population has doubled in those 3 years. The beaver population has doubled the number of beaver colonies in the last 4 years. So big changes going on, and those will go somewhere, we know.
I guess we can just get right into the wolf-moose study. I guess if you could just about what you're, I mean, you hit a little bit on what you're looking for, but mm-hmm. what the purpose of the study is.
Oh, to clarify, understand how predators and prey act in nature when, mm-hmm. when people aren't directing the show so actively. And in a place where there are no, the critical thing at Isle Royale that makes it so important from a research standpoint and a science standpoint is that we're not killing wolves, we're not killing moose, and we're not harvesting the forest. So it's maybe the only place in the world where all three levels, predator, prey, and vegetation, are not being harvested or killed.
Well, I mean, not with specifics or anything. I mean, if you could provide them, I mean, what were some of the results? Anything surprise you? Anything unusual with the results of the study?
Over the long haul? I mean, yeah, probably the most, well, there's three big things that have emerged over the many decades mm-hmm. of the work. One is that nature is really complex, and even the most simple system we could imagine, one species of predator, one species of prey, and then a bunch of trees, wow. We can't even imagine all the interactions that are going on. And then it's changing all the time. That's really clear. We think of things as static and in some kind of balance, mm-hmm. and they're just rocketing up and down because of these complex interactions all the time. But then the one really important insight is that things happen that were completely unanticipated, not even imagined, and those are the events that become of long-term significance. So it's not the year-to-year interaction of predator-prey. It's that metaphorical freight train coming around the corner that you don't know is approaching. It's just going to roll over your whole world, and everything after that's different. So we've seen several of those events in 57 years, and it's those rare events that carry the whole system and determine how it behaves. So the notion that you're going to manage something and carefully fine-tune everything from year to year is largely a myth, because and probably the best example in a very practical sense is disease. Mm-hmm. Diseases we cannot even imagine where they're going to go and where they're going to emerge, and yet, boy, they are of enormous importance to populations. I mean, look at humans in the last year, if you need any more examples.
Dr. Peterson, I guess, what do you feel like what do you feel is the importance of Isle Royale to the Keweenaw, to the local community here, and I guess even if you could in the UP in general, how important is it that we have a place like that?
Oh, it was here long before us, so mm-hmm. oh, it's yeah. part of the place. And it's a major part of the major element in the place we call the Copper Country or the Keweenaw. So it's probably the iconic natural area in Western UP, certainly the Keweenaw. So it puts this little spot that we live in on the global map, actually, of places that people know about. You can go to Norway, for example, and they'll probably know more about the wolves and moose of Isle Royale than the average person in, say, Ironwood, just because they live in the middle of, they've lived in the middle of moose for a long time, and now they have wolves too. And, well, geez, where do we go to find out about wolves and moose? Well, it's that little island over in America. Where is that thing? Oh, it's in Lake Superior. And they, believe me, they know where that is.
Well, that'll wrap up this segment of Copper Country Today. Dr. Peterson, thank you so much for joining me on today's program.
Good to be with you, Sam.
Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. We'll be right back with the second segment of Copper Country Today.